Welcome to Zichu Daf Simanim. I'm Rabbi Avram Goldar, and today we're Masechus Shabbos Daf Pei. So the 3 points we're going to focus on. Number one, the Mishnah says that one is liable for carrying ink in Rishus HaRabim if it's the amount that two letters can be written with it. Now, Rav has said that if one took out enough ink that one can write two letters with it, but instead of placing the ink down in Rishus HaRabim, he wrote two letters in Rishus HaRabim on his clothes while he was walking, he's liable for the transfer. The ksiva, the writing, is considered the hanacha, the placing down of the ink. But if he took out enough ink to write one letter and wrote a letter, and then took out another amount of ink for one letter and wrote that letter, he's pater, because the two half measures do not combine. The reason is that the time he took out the last letter, the first letter had already begun to dry and decrease in volume. Therefore, the two letters no longer combine to form a full measure. Point number two, it says in the Mishnah earlier, on Daf Ayin Vav Amud Beis, the one's liable for carrying food out into Rishus HaRabim if it's in the amount of a grogeras, a dried fig. Now, it was taught in a brayse that if one took out the equivalent of a chetzi grogeras, half a dried fig, and then he went back inside and took out another equivalent of a chetzi grogeras, and he did so behelam echad, in one lapse of awareness, then he's liable for only one chatzis offering. However, if he did the mishtei halamos in two separate periods of unawareness, then they do not combine and he's exempt. Now, Rabbi Yossi says that even if the two acts were carried out in the same lapse of awareness, he's only liable if he took them out to the same rishus. If he took them out to two separate rishus of rubbings, a rishus rubbing over here, rishus rubbing over there, the two half measures do not combine, and he's exempt from bringing a chatas. And point number three was taught in the Braisa that after the churban, the rabbanon forbade one from plastering his house with lime unless he mixed straw or sand into the plaster. Now, Rashi explains that mixing the straw or sand into the plaster would darken the lime, which would be a sign of mourning for Yerushalayim. Rabbi Yehuda says that mixing straw is permitted, but the sand is prohibited because it strengthens the plaster, which offsets the detrimental loss of its whiteness. So once again, the 3 points are number one. The Mishnah states that one is liable for carrying ink in a Rishus HaRabim if it's the amount that one can write two letters with it. Now, Rav has said that if one took out enough ink that one can write two letters with it, but instead of placing the ink down in Rishus HaRabim, he wrote two letters in Rishus HaRabim on his clothes while he was walking, he's liable for the transfer. The ksiva, the writing, is considered the hanacha, the placing down of the ink. But if he took out enough ink to write one letter and wrote a letter, and then took out another amount of ink for one letter and wrote that letter, he's pater, because the two half measures do not combine. And the reason is that the time he took out the last letter, the first letter had already begun to dry and decrease in volume. Therefore, the two letters no longer combine to form a full measure. Point number two, it says in the Mishnah earlier on Daf Ayin Vav Amud Beis, that one is liable for carrying food out into Rishus HaRabim if it's in the amount of a grogeras, a dried fig. Now, it was taught in a brayse that if one took out the equivalent of a chetzi grogeras, half a dried fig, and then went back inside and took out another equivalent of a chetzi grogeras, and he did so behelam echad, in one lapse of awareness, then he is liable for one chatas offering. However, if he did the mishtei halamos in two separate periods of unawareness, then they do not combine, and he's pater. Rav Yossi says that even if the two acts were carried out in the same lapse of awareness, he's only liable if he took them out to the same rishus. If he took them out into two separate rishus of rabbims, the two half measures do not combine, and he's pater from bringing achatas. And point number three, Tanna Bright said, after the churban, the rabbanon forbade one from plastering his house with lime, unless he mixed straw or sand into the plaster. And Rashi explains that mixing the straw or sand into the plaster would darken the lime, which would be a sign of avelas for Yerushalayim, a sign of mourning for Yerushalayim. Rav Yehuda says that mixing in straw is permitted, but sand is prohibited because it strengthens the plaster, which offsets the detrimental loss of its whiteness. All right, so now we go to our Simfer Pei, and the two most popular suggestions was either payus or something to do with pay, payday, pay payment, PayPal, pay an expensive item, pay your taxes, pay up. A loan shark saying pay up. Our cashier saying pay up from Ellie. I thought it was very funny. We're going to go with payday and wads of cash stuffed in someone's pocket. So it's payday and the character has wads of cash stuffed in his pocket. So thank you very much, everybody, for your suggestions. So here goes. On payday, the painter pulled out some cash and bought himself the newfangled write-on with ink suit after he slimmed down on the half-fig diet while plastering his client's home with lime mixed with sand. Once again, in slow motion. On payday, that means we're on Daf Pei. On payday, the painter pulled out some cash and bought himself the newfangled write-on with ink suit Which reminds us, the Mishnah stated that one is liable for carrying ink in a Rishus of Rabbim if it's the amount that two letters can be written with. Rava said if one took out enough ink that one can write two letters with, but instead of placing the ink down in Rishus of Rabbim, he wrote two letters in Rishus of Rabbim on his clothes while he's walking, as an example, he's liable for the transfer. The ksiva, the writing, is considered the hanacha, the placing down the ink. But if he took out enough ink to write one letter and wrote a letter, and then took out another amount of ink for one letter and wrote a letter, he's pater, because the two half measures do not combine. The reason is that the time he took out the last letter, the first letter had already begun to dry and decrease in volume. Therefore, the two letters no longer combine to form a full measure. So on payday, the painter pulled out some cash and bought himself the newfangled Right On With Ink suit. After he slimmed down on the half fig diet, which reminds us, it says in the Mishnah earlier on Daf Ein Vav Amud Beis, the one's liable for carrying food into Rishus HaRabim if it's the amount of a grogeris, a dried fig. It was taught in a Brisa that if one took out the equivalent of a chetzi grogeris, half a dried fig, and then he went back inside and took out another equivalent of a chetzi grogeris, and he did so behel me'echad in one lapse of awareness, then he's liable for one chatas offering. However, if he did them b'shtei halamos, in two separate periods of unawareness, then they do not combine, and he is pater. Rav Yossi says that even if the two acts were carried out in the same lapse of awareness, he's only liable if he took them out to the same rishus. If he took them out into two separate rishus or rabbims, the two half measures do not combine, and he's exempt from bringing a chatas. So on payday, the painter pulled out some cash and bought himself the newfangled Right On With Ink suit after he slimmed down on the half fig diet while plastering his client's home with lime mixed with sand. Which reminds us, it was taught in a Braisa that after the Churban, the Rabbanan forbade one from plastering his house with lime unless he mixed straw or sand into the plaster. Rashi explains that mixing the straw or sand into the plaster would darken the lime, which would be a sign of mourning for Yerushalayim. Rav Yudah says that mixing in straw is permitted, but sand is prohibited because it strengthens the plaster, which offsets the detrimental loss of its whiteness. So once again, on payday, the painter pulled out some cash and bought himself the newfangled Right On With Ink suit after he slimmed down on the half-fig diet while plastering his client's home with lime mixed with sand. All right, so now it's time for a four blah bat chazara. Daf Ein Vav. So the simple Ein Vav is an IV tube. So here goes. The patient who forced himself to eat camel food combined with some more stringent cow food to win a bet was hooked up on the IV tube. IV tube, that means Ron Duff, Ein Vav. So the patient who forced himself to eat camel food, which reminds us, when Rabin came to Bavel, he said there was a machlokes in a case where one carried out bean straw, eitza, which is typically fed to camels in a large quantity to feed a cow. Rabbi Yochanan said the one who carried it out is exempt, since cows do not usually eat this, and achila idei adchak, losh me'achila, eating in a forced way is not considered eating. Even though it's considered a normal eating for a camel, the amount that he carried out for the cow is not enough to feed a camel. Reish Lakish said he's liable because he holds achila al yedei adchak, shmei achila, eating in a forced way is considered eating. So the patient who forced himself to eat camel food combined with some more stringent cow food to win a bet, which reminds us, the Mishnah said that items with different measurements, in order to be liable when carrying them outside, cannot be combined with each other. Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina said that they cannot be combined for the more stringent of them, the more chamur of them, but they can be combined for the more lenient, the more kal of them. Rashi explains that a feed whose minimum amount is large is considered kal, lenient, and one whose minimum amount is small is considered more chamur, more stringent. Therefore, camel feed, which is considered lenient, cannot be combined with cow feed to complete the minimum amount of a cow's mouthful. But cow feed, which is considered more chamur, more stringent, can be combined with camel feed to complete the minimum amount of a camel's mouthful. So the patient who forced himself to eat camel food, combined with some more stringent cow food, to win a bet, was hooked up on the IV tube and told that he could only drink a revius of any liquid. Which reminds us, the opening mission of the 8th parak lists the minimum measures of various beverages and liquids, such as wine, milk, honey, oil, and water, to be liable for carrying on Shabbos. The Talmud Kama holds that all other liquids are a revius. Rabbi Shimon holds that all liquids are a revius. The smaller measurements only apply to one who stored those substances in such small quantities. Daf Ein Zayin. So the Simcha Ein Zayin is an aze, a goat. So here goes. The stubborn goat, that means we're on Daf Ein Zayin. The stubborn goat was smashing the kazesim of congealed wine and blood with his horns, which reminds us, Rabbi Yosef said that Rabbi Nassan was discussing congealed wine, and Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, who was discussing congealed blood of a nevela, both hold that a revius of a liquid substance will congeal into a solid substance the size of a kazayas. Abai suggests that this is not necessarily so. Perhaps Rabbi Nassin only holds this for congealed wine, which is a thin liquid and loses much of its volume when it congeals. But blood, which is thicker, may not require ravias to produce a kazayas when congealed. And perhaps Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda only holds this for congealed blood, which is thick and doesn't lose much of its volume when it congeals. But wine, which is a thin liquid, requires more than a ravias to congeal into kazayas. So the stubborn goat was smashing the kazayasim, congealed wine and bud with his horns to get rid of the swarm of flies and gnats, which reminds the review to say the name of Rav. Kol ma shebara kosh baruch hu b'olamo, labara davar echad uvatala. In all that Kosh Baruch Hu created in his world, he did not create even one thing needlessly. Among the few examples he brought are, the slug was created as a remedy for a sore, the fly was created as a cure for the sting of a hornet. Rashi explains that one crushes the fly and places it on the place of the sting. The gnat was created to be a cure for a snake bite. So the stubborn goat was smashing the kazayasim of congealed wine and blood with his horns to get rid of the swarm of flies and gnats when he spotted a traveling salesman selling cloaks, overcoats, and sidras for those who fear Hashem. Which reminds us, Rabbi Zera once encountered Rabbi Yehuda was in a lighthearted mood, so he decided to ask him about curiosities in the world, such as the meaning of names of various items. Rabbi Yehuda answered, an outer cloak is called a lebusha because wearing it keeps one from being embarrassed, lebusha. An overcoat is called the glima, because one who wears it is shapeless like a golem. And a head wrap worn by the rabbis is called the sudra, because the secrets of Hashem are revealed to those who fear Him. Sod Hashem l'riyav. Daf Ein Ches. So the Simfra Ein Ches is a child going ugh. So here goes. The child went ugh, ugh. That means run Daf Ein Ches. The child went ugh as he spit out the terrible tasting medicine made of wine and honey. Which reminds us, Abai stated the following rule for determining the shear of a substance that one is liable for carrying, if that substance has more than one use. Any substance that has two uses, one common and one not common, the Rabbanim follow the common use to determine the minimum share for liability, even if this results in a leniency. For example, wine's common use is for drinking, while its use for healing is uncommon. The Rabbanim therefore followed its use for drinking, which is a large measure, even though this results in a kula, in a leniency. Any substance that has two uses, both of which are common, the Rabbanim follow the common use that results in astringency. For example, honey is used both for eating as well as for healing. So the Rabbanim follow its use for healing even though it results in astringency since a smaller amount of honey is required for healing purposes. So the child went ugh as he spit out the terrible tasting medicine made of wine and honey all over the paper receipt, which reminds us the next Mishnah continues to identify the minimum shear for various substances, including this list are paper, enough to write a tax collector's receipt, a kesher mochsin, a raised paper, enough to wrap around the mouth of a small flask of balsam oil, hide, or enough to make a kameya, parchment, enough to write the smallest parsha of tefillin, which is Shema Yisrael. So the child went ugh as he spit out the terrible tasting medicine made of wine and honey all over the paper receipt, when all of a sudden there was a knock on the door, and it was the tax collector's runner. Which reminds us, it was taught in the Brisa that according to the Tanna Kamma, one is only liable for carrying a tax collector's receipt, a kesher mochsin, if he has not yet shown it to the tax collector. Once he has, it no longer has a use, and therefore one is no longer liable for carrying it. Rabbi Yehuda holds that he's still liable since he has a need for it. There's machlokes about what Rabbi Yehuda meant that he has a need for it. Abai says he will retain the receipt in case the tax collector sends runners after him to check if his taxes are paid. If he couldn't prove he paid, he'd be brought back to the official to be cleared. Rav Yehuda holds that he would keep the receipt to avoid this. Rav and Rav Ashi bring alternative pshatim. Daf Ein Tes. So the Simfra Ein Tes is an 8, a pen. And we think of a scribe, a silver with a quill. So here goes. The rookie scribe took his quill. Scribe taking his quill, that means we're on Daf Ein Tes. The rookie scribe took his quill and practiced writing on unprocessed hide the size of a kameya, which reminds us, Rav Nachman told Rav that unprocessed hide has the same minimum shear to be liable for carrying as process hide, which is the amount to make a kameya. He brings a proof from a Mishnah later on that teaches that the minimum shear from a laban, whitening wool, menapates, disentangling it, and saveya, dyeing, is the same shear for tova, spinning the thread, since the raw wool stands to be spun into thread. So here too, in the case of unprocessed hide, its shear is the same shear as tanned hide, since it stands to be tanned. So the rookie scribe took his quill and practiced writing an unprocessed hide the size of a kameya. When all of a sudden he realized his hands were tummy from touching his tefillin scrolls, which reminds us, it was taught in a brisa regarding which parts of the tefillin render one's hands tummy when touched, in keeping with one of the 18 enactments learned earlier on. The Tanna Kamma says the straps of the tefillin make one's hands tummy when they're attached to the tefillin. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda said in the name of Rabbi Shimon, touching the katsitsa, the leather boxes, render one's hands tummy. And Rabbi Zakkai says in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, one's hands only become tummy if they touch the mezuzah, the scroll of the tefillin itself. So the rookie scribe took his quill and practiced writing on unprocessed hide, the size of a kameya. when all of a sudden he realized his hands were tame from touching his phone scrolls that were written on cloth. Which reminds us, it was taught in Braisa that it's halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, that tefillin must be written on cloth, which is the outer layer of the hide, and a mezuzah must be written on duchsustos, which is the inner layer of the hide. When one writes on the cloth, he must write on the side of the cloth that originally faced the flesh of the animal, and when writing on duchsustos, he must write on the side that originally faced the hair of the animal. This braisa was brought as one of the many challenges to Rav, who said that tefillin may also be written on duchsustos. The Gemara deflects the challenge by saying that the halacha l'moshe m'Sinai may be only stating how to fulfill the mitzvah of writing tefillin in the best way possible. However, tefillin written on duchsustos may still be kosher. All right, now it's time to conclude with our Bob quiz of 10 questions plus 3 bonus questions from Masechus Brachos. Here we go. Number 1. Which duff do you learn that everything is created for a purpose, even gnats and flies? That's on duff. Ein Zion. Great. Number 2. Which duff do you learn that one should darken plaster as a sign of avails over the Churban of Yerushalayim? That's on duff. Pei. Good. Number 3. Which duff do you learn that one can combine something with a more stringent shear with something that has a more lenient shear? That's on duff. Ayin Vav. Good. Number 4. Which duff do you learn there's a sheet that says that one is exempt if he ate a chetzi gregeris in one rishus of rabim and another chetzi gregeris in another rishus of rabim, even if it was behel me'echad, he'd still be pater? That's on duff. Pei. Great. Number 5. Which duff do we discuss trapping and squeezing a chila zone whether psia but called disha? That's on duff. Ein Hey. Good. Number 6. Which duff do we have a discussion regarding which part of the tefillin makes one's hands tame? That's on duff. Ein Tes. Good. Number 7. Which duff do we learn how to determine the shear for something that has two uses, such as wine or honey? That's on duff. Ein Ches. Good. Number 8. Which duff do we discuss misase, where one intended to lift something, but he cut something instead? That's on duff. Ayin Beis. Good. Number 9. Which duff do you learn that the shear for unprocessed hide is the same as processed hide? It's enough to make a kamea. That's on duff. Ayin Tes. Good. And finally, number 10. Which duff do you learn Malkokas, whether if one intended to throw something 2 amos, but he threw 4 amos, whether that would be a case of masasek? That's on duff. Ayin Gimel. Good. Now the 3 bonus questions from Masechus Brachos. Number 1. Which duff do we discuss making the brachas on Nisim, on miracles? That's on duff. Nun Dalit. Good. Number 2. Which duff do we learn that there's times when one can speak after saying Hamotzi? That's on duff. Mem. Great. Number 3. Which duff do we have the question regarding what is the minimum amount of bread one needs to eat in order to make a Zimun? That's on duff. Mem Tes. Excellent. All right. That concludes our pop quiz. Plus the 3 bonus questions from Masechus Brachos. This is Rabbi Avraham Goldman Zichu wishing you a great day and great learning.